Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello, and welcome along to the Worst Idea of All Time, Episode 2. Tim Batt and myself have just finished our second screening of Sex and the City, the movie. He's currently incapacitated on account of having a piece of toast. What bloody hour is it in your corner of the world, my friend?
It's toast o'clock, mate.
Isn't it always, though?
We're dealing with breakfast hours, yeah. I'll tell you what's happened. Let me finish my mouthful before I do. So I'll tell you what. Boy, if there's one thing I don't want in my ear holes, it's someone chewing. I think I've got that. What's it called? Like myosopia or something? I actually, when I hear people chewing in my... No. No, guy.
Yeah, you love it. You secretly love it.
It's kind of the opposite thing.
Actually, you are a deeply closeted ASMR freak.
I can feel my fist ball up when I hear people chewing in my ear.
You hate the thing you crave.
Huh? I hate listening.
You hate the thing you crave.
Look, here's what's happened. Went to a couple of movies in the New Zealand International Film Festival yesterday, back to back, with my beloved wife. Came home. It was pretty late. And I had to wait for her to fall asleep before I started Sex and the City because, truth be told, she's not as excited as you and I are about the voyage beginning once again. So I waited for her to drift off. We're dealing with sort of midnight now, 2.5 hour movie. I was like, you know what I'll do? I'll see if I can get maybe like an hour in before I get up crack off to finish the bugger off. Knock the bastard off, as one of our heroes, Sir Edmund Hillary, said. Of his nemesis, Mount Everest, which had wronged him in the past.
Most famous nemesis.
So I watched for a little bit, and I think I got 10 minutes, or maybe 15, and then I think I fell asleep for 10 minutes, and then I kind of came to and stopped the phone playing the movie, and then watched the rest of the movie in the morning. But I missed a bit where Steve admitted to having sex with someone else, so I just felt bad for him the whole film.
I see, because you didn't understand what all of the bloody consternation was about. You made it deeper than 10 minutes. I mean, here is a man who has learned nothing. I know circumstance, you know, dictates how and when you get to watch, but as recently as the last episode, I remember you bemoaning the fact that, you know, you'd done this late night watch and it had sort of created an immediate rift between you and the film. And here you are toiling away at 12 a.m. But before we dig into that...
Hold on. What do you want from me, man? It's a 2.5 hour film. Got to figure out some sort of methodology here. I'm not going to... I physically can't wake up at 6 a.m. to watch Sex and the City 2. It's unconscionable.
I know, it's tough. It's upsetting. As it stands with the East Coast to New Zealand time difference, I do get to watch it in the middle of the day, or you know, there or thereabouts. Whereas it is, I mean, your two options, neither of which are appealing. You can either sully a wonderful date night with your beautiful wife Zoe,
not happening,
by this being the last thing that touches you on the way to sleep, or you can sort of destroy the prospective day on your hands by getting up at Sparrow's Fart and engaging in some Sex in the City. I understand that you're in a tight spot, and I actually respect, you know, the knock an hour off by night, get up, knock an hour and a half off in the morning approach. I think it's not unreasonable.
Didn't quite
all
work.
This dilly dallying around. I mean, did you feel any better or worse about the movie
you
after
know what?
The second screening?
I just kept thinking of your opinions and attitudes toward the first viewing, and I got a lot more out of the movie. I liked it a lot more than I did the first watch, I think. You're right, there's a lot of threads going on, you know? A lot of action, a lot of storyline, a lot of plot that we're dealing with and unpacking. And
absolutely.
I came away at the end just thinking, dear God, whose bright idea was it to make a sequel to this? We've got a bow on it. We're all good.
I also did. Confusingly of all, though, at the end of this screening, I sort of wanted almost, not to suffer through the entirety of it, but just to revisit the key plot points of Sex and the City 2, to just watch how they put the piece, you know, how what they papered over in between the eras and, like, how they put it together. Like, is it, because there are a few little threats, like Stanford and Anthony. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what's happening between them, between this film and the next, but in this film they share a very tepid New Year's Eve kiss, just out of convenience. They're the only two pieces of tolerable company at some god-awful party. But by the time we kick off at the second movie, I mean, as well, you know, Tim, they're having a big gay wedding.
A big gay wedding. The real centerpiece of the whole film. You can't have a Sex in the City movie without a big old wedding.
I guess this is true. Or, you know... A trip abroad.
So
can I just quickly delve into...
Is your point there that you wanted to see a little more Stanford and Anthony? You thought we could a little bit more in there?
Not necessarily, but there's that. There was the sort of... the ever mine, ever thine, ever ours, the Ludwig van Beethoven quote. I remember that resurfaces in the second film. Just these little... You know, drips and drabs, which I feel exist independent of the television series, that, you know, is the connective tissue between Sex and the Cities 1 and 2.
Samantha's fabulous humping dog.
That's right. I figured, what's one more little bitch at the big gay wedding? Like, all these, you know, these little details. That's all by the by. It left me... I know I don't want to watch that movie again, but it did leave me curious... about, you know, just specifics. Like, I'd love for... it's impossible. The only way I can really get the information I want is to do the research myself, but I just bullheadedly refuse. Before we talk too much about the plot, Tim, I want to talk about the plot of your life. You said that Zoe was maybe not as enthused by the prospect of digging through another year of the worst idea. Can you please tell me how the conversation went?
I won't drag a transcript into the podcast for all and sundry to hear, but she cares about me, she loves me, and she's worried about me. She saw what happened with the last season of Sex in the City 2, and apart from anything else, it's you know, it's no small time suck, especially because we're making some attempt to contract the duration in which we record 52 episodes of this one, below a year. So hey, look, in terms of all the things that get thrown in a marriage, I'd say this one's fine. This is dandy. Don't you worry about old Timbo.
She's worried for me, mate.
She cares about me. Not like you. Put me through this. Get me up at Sparrow's fart to watch fucking Sex in the City.
I feel, you know, we worry about you differently. So, you know, there's a fairness in saying they're not identical. But I worry for you too. I worry, you know, the idea of this tanking your beautiful union, of course it's going to send a shiver down my spine.
If your marriage can't sustain 52 watches of Sex in the City, then, you know, that's no kind of life I want to build for myself.
The ultimate test. So they say, what do they say? Play Monopoly with your partner before you marry them, because it brings out the worst in people.
Unless they just tune out. Some people are just they just don't want to sort of participate. And I respect that. It's like Monopoly. It's not real. I'm just going to down a smoothie while I'm here.
Oh, man. You're bloody off to a... You're on a real health kick. What sort of toast did you have for brekkie?
Whole grain, bitch.
Good on you. Any toppings or just a dry bit of warm bread?
Just butter, mate. I'm a simple man of simple wants.
Shit, you are a simple man. What's in your smoothie?
We've got raspberries this time because they were on special at the supermarket. A little bit of natural yogurt and a banana. And they're just a little bit of milk, so it's liquidy enough. It's not
so
bad.
So you're going for it. Yeah, it's a much more glamorous smoothie than the toast you were offering. Look, yeah. The first thing I thought when I watched this movie, Tim, was everything feels different and not in a good way. That is to say, while I did actually wind up not enjoying the film, I was immediately on edge. I was nervous.
No.
All the familiar feelings of why we stopped doing this in the first instance came back to me in a real heap. But there was nothing for it. I thought, you know, mind over matter. I actually learnt mind over matter. The most effective teaching of mind over matter I had was from a hitchhiker I once picked up. I was driving with a guy named Matt Proctor. It was just the two of us. Or maybe it was with James Robbins. It's not important. Either way, we were driving between Christchurch and Dunedin. And to whittle away the time, we picked up a guy who was a pretty scary guy, actually, as it turned out. He had, very visibly, he had a smiley face sort of burned into his arm.
Whoa.
And he just kept saying, mind over matter, I don't mind, it don't matter. And that was, he was talking about the fact, I was like, wow, man, it looks like you really hurt your arm to get that smiley face on it. And I don't know that's actually how I absorbed the lesson, but it's certainly the first thing I think of when I think mind over matter. I think, you know, I mean, by all means, pick up hitchhikers. You're going to meet some interesting characters, but also be safe out there, everyone.
Yeah, that sounds like that man wasn't of sound mind when he got that particular marking on his body. Though that is coming from two gentlemen currently discussing who have Arnold Schwarzenegger's son emblazoned on their rear ends. So, you know.
That's different.
Let he without sin cast the first stone. It is not up for us to debate the permanent markings of other people's bodies.
It's true. But I sort of, I mentally readjusted and wound up having what could be described as an okay time.
Well, that's a real real fall from grace for Guy Montgomery coming up the track. He started strong, very enthused about the movie, lost a lot of steam in the second lap.
Yeah, it is long, isn't it?
Yep.
2.5 hours is long.
There's no getting around that fact, and it doesn't just make the movie watching experience somewhat arduous, it also makes it quite a logistical, you know, ordeal, trying to fit it into your day. I'm living proof. I'm very bleary-eyed at the moment.
You're right, you're making it work. Now, one of the things I sort of used to occupy my pathetic little mind while I was watching the film, Tim, is I was fondly reminiscing on the presence of Coffee Guy in the last film. I remembered he existed. I remembered we dug into the actor Tom Stratford's back catalogue to discover that he actually had a small role, the specifics of which I couldn't recall, in Sex and the City, the first film.
Were you looking
and
out?
And so I put my little fingers to work and dug into the IMDb. He is on the IMDb page. Underneath the cast list, he is listed as Elaine's friend. And then in parentheses, it says uncredited. So, you know, you're going to have to, it's going to be an eagle-eyed watcher who's going to get, you know, who's going to win the race to Coffee Guy. But I thought, well, you know, by way of a clue or to help lead the case, I thought, who is Elaine?
Yeah.
So I searched for the word Elaine amongst the cast list, and lo and behold, there is no Elaine featured in the cast list for this movie.
Wow.
How is it possible for a character to be listed as Elaine's friend when they don't even deem Elaine, you know, the primary defining factor for the secondary character is that they know Elaine, and yet Elaine is somehow absent from the credits?
This is some skull and bones bullshit.
I mean,
across here, man?
I don't know. First of all, I was, you know, I can't find hide nor hair of Coffee Guy. But secondly, what sort of scrub job are we looking at where the entire presence of Elaine in Sex and the City has been erased? They're burning their books. This is what Orwell predicted in 1984. This is Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
Guy, you know that I've often, seasons gone by, wanted to drill into the Hollywood accounting practices of these films. I suspect Elaine is some sort of tax dodge, like a shell company cast member, if you will. I reckon if we look through the payroll of this film, we're going to see a lot of background actors getting... look, I don't know how much you get to be on a feature film. $4,000? $5,000? Sounds sort of ballpark, something around there. And then we're going to come to Elaine, who no one's quite sure which scene she's in. And the cast member playing Elaine will be receiving the princely sum of $80 million. It's a total tax dodge. They're siphoning off funds. Elaine is an acronym.
And what does it stand for?
Alleviating... Lovely. Emoluments. Now. Yeah, didn't quite stick the landing on the acronym. I haven't quite put all the pieces together yet, Guy, but I feel like this is what's happened. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. You can't have Elaine's friend without Elaine.
That's right. I mean, what have you got then? You've got a stranger. Certainly, if it is a tax dodge, it might go some ways to explaining why on earth this man is consuming such an unholy amount of caffeine. He's anxious, he's nervous, he's on the run. He's looking over his shoulder. He's not a comfortable guy.
Coffee.
Also, for reference, yeah,
when
I mean,
you're on the lamb, get it in you.
You really didn't stick the landing on the acronym, but I like the theory and I like where your head's at. Ample room for exploration. I just find it so weird. And then I started thinking, well, did Tom write his own... I mean, because who's going to dig into it this much, you know? Like, it's just us. Tidier on the curriculum vitae, on your resume, if it says Sex and the City 1 and 2. It's kind of punishing or humiliating if you're only associated with the second, which was both a critical and... No, it was probably not a commercial failure. So I'm starting to ask questions about Tom's motivation. You know?
Well, this is fabulous stuff. Season 1 of The Worst Idea of All Time. Guy Montgomery and Tim Batt watch the worst idea, watch Grown Ups 2 52 times to try and drill into the acting performance of Patrick Schwarzenegger and then launch the brand nationally and internationally of Blaze Pizza, a fantastic franchise. Season 2 sees the boys jumping back into the well, this time for Sex and the City 2, to try and figure out once and for all what that guy in the back is up to, where's he going. He's drinking far too much coffee for his own good. Season 3, I mean, look, what happens when you piss into the wind, I guess was the answer for that one. And in this fourth season, an investigation continues. Is Coffee Guy in this film? Only we have the ability to figure this out now. We've got a great opportunity here.
It's true. I mean, and the prospect of searching for him far and wide is both exciting and overwhelming to me. It's no small amount of work we've carved out for ourselves. I did pause the movie at one point because I thought, well, you know, where's he going to show up? Presumably a restaurant or a cafe, anywhere he's got immediate and efficient access to a large amount of caffeine. When Carrie tells her friends that she's engaged to Big and Charlotte gets overwhelmingly excited and sort of makes a screaming sort of noise and the entire restaurant grinds to a halt, I was combing through the background of frame, high and low, far and wide, but I could not see the man. I did find, I mean, some seriously entertaining pieces of extra acting took a very good screenshot that I will send to you. Special mention must go to a man who is not Coffee Guy, but looks like he's either been stood up by or is waiting for Coffee Guy in the far right corner of the restaurant. He is upset would be one word you could use to describe him. While everyone else is plastered on a huge smile to express enthusiasm for Carrie's engagement to the man she's been dating for 10 years, this guy is going through the motions in a big way.
Cool. I look forward to seeing him in my next watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got him frozen in perpetuity right here. I'm just looking him in the eyes right now. He's scared of something, man. I don't know what he's running from.
What do you think's going on there, Guy? Take a stab in the dark. Your guess is probably better than most people's.
Well, the idea of going out for a meal by yourself can be quite a relaxing prospect. I myself enjoy it thoroughly. But that doesn't guarantee that every time you do it, you're going to have the relaxing or reflective time that you might have hoped for. You know, occasionally your mind can take you down cul-de-sacs that you don't care to walk down. And it looks to me like this guy's meal alone has gone from a moment of joy to, I don't know, like maybe the news of the engagement has triggered memories of why he's eating alone, and he's sort of remembering the wrongs he's committed that have prevented him from accessing true love in his long life.
That's so sad.
Yeah, maybe he knows something that Charlotte York doesn't. Maybe he knows Mr. Big and is aware that this is a guy who has a shady relationship with marriage, and you know he can't express, you know, unadulterated enthusiasm for Carrie because he knows things might not end as well as they'd hope. Who's
maybe
to say?
Maybe he is the brother of Big's second wife.
Oh, yeah. That sounds likely.
Second wife out of three is got to be, or second spouse out of three has got to be a pretty unpleasant place in the mantle to occupy, eh? Like, first
but you
wife,
don't know.
Marriages don't work out. You know, shit happens. You marry someone, doesn't turn out to be right. You know, that happens. You get married again, doesn't work out. It's like, oh man, gutted. And then your person goes to the third, and then you're the second. It's like, this is the worst. You weren't their first love. You went to third. In my head, for some reason, you settle on the third person for the rest of your life, irrespective of what happens inside of the relationship. Three strikes and you're out, as they say. But that second spot, man, I wouldn't want it.
Yeah. But this, no, you don't know it, do you? You don't know it going in. Like, with you're talking about with hindsight, obviously. Because any time that someone's going into a marriage, and it is for a man who's not been married before, I'm talking, of course, to a newlywed still basking in the afterglow of his blessed union, you've probably got a pretty strong feeling that this is a relationship you'd like to commit to.
Well, unless you're Elaine, in which case there are certain financial structures that the state of New York can grant you once you are in a legally recognized relationship vis-a-vis a marriage.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I see. So, Elaine, the acronym is also represented by some sort of, you know, physical entity.
Guy, there's a lot going on in it. You know, we're really just poking around the sides at the moment. It's going to take a while to really figure this thing out. A lot of bits of paper, a lot of blue tack, a lot of string. There's a lot of details to put together.
I don't know why conspiracy theorists seem to think that string is such a vital component in getting to the bottom of a case. Like,
it is absolutely essential.
No, it always stresses me out.
You can't have a good theory without string, eh? And things have got to be on a wall. I do get that. It's good to have something visually out there. You kind of get the stuff out of your head. You put it in a physical space to represent what's going on so you can really take a good look at it, take a step back, and say, when was the last time I had a shower? Right. let's tend to that. And then you get back there and you get your ball of yarn and you go, okay, this connects to this thing and this to this. I reckon that's where string theory comes from. You're aware of, you know, from physicists?
Yeah, I reckon I don't know about string theory. What is it?
No one understands it. I say that because I don't understand it. It's got to do with the theory when you get to the quantum level about how stuff actually sort of operates and what the whole fabric of the universe is made of.
Yeah.
I think it's similar to, like, what is it? Is light a wave or a particle, you know? It's both. I don't know.
We're operating well outside my mental jurisdiction right now.
Both you and I. How'd you do in science in high school, Guy? Were you good at it?
No. Tim, science was comfortably one of my worst subjects. I was all right at biology. Physics, I took such a little interest in, I just literally stopped going to the classes. Mm. And chemistry, I got 25% in my year 10 chemistry exam.
Not great.
I actually wrote a letter to the teacher, Mr. Harwood, on the exam paper saying, I did not remember being taught some of these materials in class. And with hindsight, I see how Mr. Harwood read that as a criticism of his teaching. It was meant to be sort of a self-reflective piece of criticism towards my attitude towards learning chemistry. Suffice it to say, I was called into the deputy headmaster's office for insubordination and had to do something called a Saturday night detention, where I resat exactly the same exam at 6 p.m. in one of the boarding houses. You'll be pleased to hear I studied quite hard for that and I scored 37% on literally the same test.
37. Guy, well done you. I'll tell you what, mate. You didn't quite double your score, but you got about half as much again on top of. It's pretty good.
Well, I know.
50% improvement.
Cumulatively, yeah, we're talking about like a 62% exam result here? Of course, they didn't say it that way. 62 doesn't come out of... Yeah. But then, apparently, according to the mathematicians at the school, you got to add the hundreds together as well. So it's not 62 out of 100, as I pled. It's not important. Look, I'm in New York. God knows where Mr. Harwood is.
Did I ever tell you about the letter I wrote to an exam marker on the exam paper?
You did not.
I was bored. It was classic, you know, little shits during 15-year-old Timbo. But the new system had come in. They changed how they assess high school students in New Zealand. New system had come in. No one quite knew what was going on. We were still shaking it down and trying to bed it in a bit. They gave me an exam paper. I think it was for, what subject was it for? I can't even remember. And it had a bit. The first page said, this page has intentionally been left blank and is to be used for your working. It will not be assessed. But then
here comes Tim Batt.
On the front of the paper, it said, had a whole bunch of rules, and one of the rules was you may not communicate with your marker. So I wrote a letter to the marker on that page because I wanted to see what rule would win. I think I failed the paper, but I can't remember if that was a general lack of academia or something related to the note.
That is quite, like, you're operating on quite a high level of philosophical experimentation there, where it's like, I mean, you're creating an unholy amount of legwork if they side with the idea that you've tried to communicate with the marker and therefore you will fail the paper. But as a purely philosophical question, it does raise an interesting, you know, issue of whether or not they have a right to fail you on account of a piece of paper they have specifically outlined you will not be graded on.
Yeah, I would be tempted to say that no one gave a shit. That seemed to be the general mode of assessment.
You mean to tell me you failed independently of the letter you wrote?
I believe so. I believe from memory that may well have been the case. I didn't fail a lot of things, though. It was pretty hard to actually fail stuff under the NCEA regime. I remember one time I got a letter from the Ministry of Education to our high school because my media studies teacher, very fond of me, thought I was a bright boy, and he put me in the scholarship exam for it, and I went in, took one look at the first question in the paper, very complicated, was way out of my depth. And I had stood up in my seat and I said, fuck this, and walked out. And I got a note back to the school saying that I was disrupting other people, which is quite fair enough. Like, there's no need for that. Truly, yeah. There wasn't.
But I understand, because by that point you're literally on your way out the door at high school. I remember when I finished my last high school exam, I did a big cha-hoo on my way out the door.
Fabulous.
I didn't get reprimanded for that, but you know, rest assured, whoa, it was a big cha-hoo. One or two of the other pupils undoubtedly would have looked up from their papers to see who was cha-hooing. But so swiftly did I move, they probably only saw my ankles. Famous as they were, very difficult to identify someone from their ankles.
Everyone knew Guy Montgomery's really ankles, though, because you were so fast. You were constantly, people were whipping around to see what that flash was. You're only going to get the ankles, just heading out the door. Last thing you see, the only thing you see. It's too quick.
That's right. We've really meandered down a side road here. Should we get things back on track, Tim?
And why?
The
but
best
why
way I
you?
Know how. Because there's so much to unpack here. Like I said, I've got reams of notes left over from the first screening. I've got, you know, manuscripts absolutely
right.
Fucking filled to the corners of the page with observations
right.
and questions.
Of course you're right, Guy. As per usual. I'm sorry. You go.
One of the things I want to talk with you about, and I'd be interested to know if you've noticed it, is in one of the scenes when Carrie and Big, it's early doors, you know, they're still very much smitten by one another, are climbing into bed. Carrie does so, and look, I understand that the fashion is a huge part of what made this show what it is, but she's climbing into bed with a clutch, quite a long pearl necklace, sort of reaching down towards her midriff, I would almost say, as she gets into bed. Drives me insane and also worries me. Like, maybe I understand maybe a necklace that's slightly closer to, you know, that's shorter because it's got less free rein, and that, you know, the field of movement it has is restricted, and so it's not going to be obstructive or annoying. But this is, frankly, a choking hazard.
What bit of the movie is this in? I'm trying to place this fashion item.
It's early on, after they've maybe bought the apartment, and she's been peeling corn and saying she wants to contribute to the apartment, and they climb into bed, and she's trying to read a library book, which is you know, the greatest love letters ever written.
Yeah, I think that was snooze time for me. This watch, unfortunately, won't happen again.
Ah, a little window you missed. You know, it probably made for a more relaxing screening, because the whole time I was thinking, is this a one-off? Is she going to take those pearls off? These are questions that go unanswered. But, I mean, I don't even know. I don't wear jewellery. But it's not really worn to bed, is it?
Surely not. You're not going to wear a pearl necklace to bed. I mean, you'd wake up with a bunch of indentations in your neck, for one thing. You get a very bad sleep, for another. And thirdly, what if it gets sort of caught in something and you break your necklace? They're pearls, for crying out loud.
What got me, it was so long. Like, it could have easily wrapped around her neck.
You know,
anyway,
what...
my concern.
You know what the loveliest bit of being in bed with someone, where you just sort of tuck your arm around their neck? How's that going to play when you're wearing a pearl necklace?
That's true.
Bad for all involved.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, it's something for you to look out for in the weeks moving forward.
Looking forward to it.
It's a minor quibble, but one that I went to the trouble of, you know, underlining to remind me that I need talk about it. Holy hell! Sorry, I'm talking to you in headphones, and my phone just started ringing loud and clear through them as I was receiving a phone call from a man named Craig. I have chosen to decline it.
Oh, I see. Well, apologies to Craig.
He'll be all right. I'm just going to message Craig to say I'll call him back.
All right, sure. Well, I'm going to assume you're not listening to this bit, which is totally fine. The shining light of this watch for me is the sheer amount of guacamole which Samantha has ploughed onto a corn chip while she is surreptitiously watching her very sexy neighbor taking his bathing suit off. It is so much guac the first chap, you look at it and you're like, she's loaded that thing up. She's gone to town on the Avo. And then we cut to the surfer man, to Dante, famous for Dante's Peak, of course. And then we cut back to a salivating Samantha, and she has somehow bested her initial offering by putting even more guac on another chip, puts it in her mouth, impressively does get the vast majority of it in, but such is the amount of guac that there's actually just a tiny little corner that gets on her mouth, on the side of her mouth, that doesn't quite fit in. So much guac, guy.
It's a brilliant piece of visual storytelling. What it is a visual metaphor for her sexual desire and appetite for Dante's Peak. The guacamole is so much more than an avocado-based dip from Mexico. It is her ovaries really exploding at the prospect of just fucking this guy's brains out.
She wants some of that peak. Like Sir Edmund Hillary against his nemesis, which he took to bed, Mount Everest.
Well, that's true. There is an adversarial sort of underpinning to her relationship to Dante because, you know, it's a temptation that she does her best to resist. To her credit, don't you think? Samantha goes through a lot of personal growth in this film. We know that she's a horn dog. She deals with her relationship to Smith Jarrett and... you know, the difficulties contained therein, I think with a lot of grace and dignity and respect.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That's why I want a Samantha movie. I really do. She's so good in this film. This way she was my shining light last week. She puts up this defense in the film, Everyone Who's Not Guy, where she's so tempted to fuck the brains out of her neighbor, but she's obviously inside of a relationship with a man who looked after her during years of chemotherapy, that she decides how she'll alleviate this or sort of make sure that she doesn't do anything to jeopardize the relationship is just gain a lot of weight. So she just starts eating and eating. Or at least that's kind of what we're told by the movie. There's a shot of her returning to New York City because she's now based in Los Angeles so she can look after Smith's career, you know, better. And she comes back for, is it the baby shower? For Charlotte's baby shower? And she walks in the door, Carrie's old apartment, and there's a shot on her midriff, and everyone looks really shocked. And in the first viewing of this film, I didn't even kind of figure out what was going on. But it turns out that, according to the movie, what we're seeing on screen of her midriff is like a disgusting amount of overarching stomach, far in excess of what is acceptable for a 50-year-old woman about town. I was like, that's fine. That's a normal human... You know,
I was exactly the same. I sort of missed it last time, and then when I saw it today, I was like, "Why?" I was like, "That's a weird shot." Yeah, it sort of got her cleavage and a tiny bit of her stomach in it. I'm like, and then you get a reaction shot of Carrie being like, "Whoa!" And I was like, "Has Samantha had a boob job in this movie that we've missed?"
That is exactly what I thought last watch as well. Because
someone
chucked a bra on there to kind of draw your attention away from what the filmmakers intended. Her breasts look fantastic, but apparently we're supposed to be looking at this this gut.
Yeah,
it wasn't even that big.
It's not even that big. It's not even that interesting. And then they're kind of, I mean, you know, it's a gentle roasting, but it's a roasting all the same. They're really giving her a little bit of their minds about the fact that she's, as they say, let herself go. Carrie does one of her trademark sort of, you know, observational quips or puns where she says, "What does your gut tell you?" And everyone laughs a little too hard at that. There was another moment, I mean, I'll tell you what, can I just quickly, while we're talking about Carrie's comic sensibility.
Yeah.
She did the, when Big Colors, He Really Stays Inside the Lines line again.
Outside the lines.
It was somehow even more uncomfortable this week. because it's like when Big Colors, there's lust. I don't know what it is in her voice. When Big Colors, I can only imagine is 40 minutes of the film's runtime as she pauses for comic and lusty effect. And then she then says, he really cocks an eyebrow, stays inside the lines. You then see Samantha and Charlotte laughing along at the joke, you know, but not in a way where they get it and they laugh at how funny or wry the observation is. They're laughing along in the way you laugh when your friend has said something that might be witty and either you haven't quite understood it or they've slightly misspoken, but it's of the moment and you're already laughing, so it's too embarrassing to stop.
I love those moments. It's when everyone recognizes that the format of humor has been laid bare in the conversation. No one quite gets what the joke was, what the intended sort of punchline or, you know, what the bit of humor was. But we understand that what you've presented is the format of a joke. So we shall laugh.
That is exactly what it is. In your day-to-day, Tim, I'm fine with that. Whatever. This is a movie. This is a comedy movie.
Do another take, you reckon?
Do another take. Like it's the lingering silence afterwards, which tells me either she's in not giving a straight answer to the question of how much sex her and Big have, but instead this vague innuendo, she's revealed too much, or she's made her friends uncomfortable, unlikely, or the more likely answer is she's made a joke which, as you say, follows the format and structure of joke telling, but is largely incomprehensible, and Charlotte and Samantha are just laughing it off until the conversation deviates elsewhere.
Guy, did you have a shining light this watch? Have you somewhere in this convo?
You better believe I did. And it goes to the great Harry Runkle. Not even for a Runkle Crunkle, but for his this guy is a real workhorse when it comes to ADR. I observed it first when in an establishing scene early on, he's at the table with Charlotte and their daughter, and he feeds one of the dogs a little bit of food, and he says, "Don't tell anyone." And it's sort of just an atmospheric throwaway line that is, it doesn't do anything to move the story forward. It just sort of establishes some of Runkle's characteristics. He's a cheeky guy. He loves his pets. It plays really well. And I thought that was nice. I wonder if he had to go into a booth to do that, because you don't necessarily see his mouth saying the words exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, not half an hour later, or when they're at the engagement, the rehearsal dinner at the restaurant. By the way, that's a restaurant we went to. Did you remember that?
No way.
Yeah, on the Sex and the City tour that Jill from Time Out New York organized with us, we drove around on the bus and saw all the sights. We visited and walked through that exact space and restaurant.
Holy shit. You're right.
But when they're outside after the dessert and they're all smoking, again in ADR, presumably, or, you know, it's a bit of atmospheric audio while they build up to the actual action of the scene, you hear the great Runkle saying, "There's nothing like an illegal Cuban cigar after dinner," which is just such a funny sentence. Like, it's just so matter of fact, you know. It's a dream to me.
I love that. The flagrant disregard for rules and regulations. That is what the upper echelon enjoy. They know they're not going to be prosecuted. It's a Cuban. It's a bloody symbol of wealth.
I loved it so much. And so, yeah, his performance in the audio booth really took my breath away this week. Also, I'd like to say, did you see the cigar smoking stuff this watch?
No, may have been asleep for that one too. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You did miss a girthy chunk of the film.
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I did. I think there's a lot that's packed into that, like, sort of 12 or so minutes. I really do think that, but I'll check on the next viewing, which won't be far away.
But they're all smoking the cigars, and then Steve shows up to, you know, because he feels so awful about having cheated on and trying to apologize to Miranda. And Miranda says a bit of privacy, because she's also out huffing down a cigar with the lads. It's Big, Runkle, and Smith Jarrett. She says, "A bit of privacy, please." She doesn't move. They all sort of go back inside. This is not 10 seconds after Runkle has said, "There's nothing, you know, there's nothing like an illegal Cuban cigar after dinner." Presumably these cigars are still, you know, very much a go. No one chugs down a cigar in less than a minute. I mean, less than 15 seconds even. And they go, yeah. And then they all march back inside an area where it's been established they can't smoke. Otherwise, they'd be smoking them in there. What are they going to do? But stuff these, you know, half-burned, flaming cigars into their pockets and stink out their suits in the entirety of the restaurant that evening?
I don't know if this is uncouth, but I enjoy a cigar, you know, at a special occasion. Probably not as expensive as what these big boys are chomping their teeth down onto. But you put them out, you save them for later. It's a lot of shit to get through if you try and knock one off in a single sitting. But I'm with you. It's it does beg the question: what are they doing with those cigars? They just put them out on their hands, or what?
I don't know. But also,
yeah.
It also, just quickly, while we're at this part of the film in this locale specifically, I understand that Miranda's desire to have a private conversation with Steve about, you know, their relationship and the pains contained within it, but her idea of privacy is asking the people she knows to move and then having a very raw and honest discussion literally in the entranceway to a popular and trendy restaurant in Soho. Yeah. Just go 5-10 meters down the road.
Yeah.
You don't need to tarnish other people's nights with the intensity of your feelings. You also aren't going to be able to, communicate. It's a courtesy thing. And while I am an avowed Miranda fan, mostly from sustained exposure in Sex and the City 2, when she's the only person with a shred of empathy, it's a little thing, and it's not a lot. I don't know that it warrants bringing up, but I just wanted to say it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you noticing it and noting it down for all time in this immortal record of Sex and the City, the 2008 film. I am supposed to dash right now to I've got a sort of an appointment, but there's something that I wanted to bring up with you, which may sustain through multiple episodes, I'm not sure. But there is a question which Carrie poses in the film that I would like us to take a stab at, and that is, what else do we know? Here's the scene. Charlotte's just had her baby. Baby Rose is out. Runkle's over the moon, absolutely besotted with this young one. He says, "It is my lot in life to be surrounded by beautiful women." Love that line. Love the delivery. Love everything about it. They're in there. There's a brief conversation about Big, who took Charlotte to the hospital after her water broke when she gave him heaps after they were in the cafe and had a bit of a tete-a-tete, and he ducked out. Carrie says today's not about Big, today is about beautiful baby Rose. We know that she's got Charlotte's here, what else do we know? And then the scene ends, but I want to know, what else do we know about Rose? Because we know a lot about Brady. And we know a lot about the trajectory of this future Rat King. But what do we really know about Charlotte's first biologically born daughter, Rose?
I mean, how much can you know about a newborn? Again, you're delving into the dangerous territory of needing to revisit other materials, namely Sex and the City 2, to see, you know, what sort of development has taken place in the two preceding years or following
she
years.
She cries a lot.
She does cry a lot. I know that she sort of stretches Charlotte's ability to mother to its the limits of its elasticity. I mean there's no reason to think that this isn't just, you know, a fortunate daughter. Charlotte and Runkle's life in this movie is the only one that appears to be, I mean, when Miranda and Steve get back together, that does. I got goosebumps again, by the way, when I saw that.
Really
I'm starting
sweet,
to think
though.
It might have something to do with Al Green's "How Can You Mend a Broken Heart" playing during their reunion. But the hairs on my arm were standing up on end again. I was overwhelmed by the biology of it. I think she's got a pretty nice life. I mean, some of Charlotte's more neurotic mannerisms. We haven't even spoken about the fact that she shits herself in this movie, which I love.
I want to gloss over it. It's. I don't like people shitting their pants in movies. It's a bit much for me. It was my least favorite bit of Bridesmaids as well, which was a film I otherwise really loved. But I was like, God damn it! I just wish that bit wasn't there.
I love it. It's funny. Shit is funny. it's responsible for dragging Carrie out of her slump.
Exactly. I was going to say it's a very good plot device It's used to good effect in this film. Look, I should dash, but I just want to posit that it is possible that Rose is a gifted child, and has some sort of power that we're not quite aware of yet, but I'm sure we'll explore that in future episodes. I'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Guacamole. Guacamole is the perfect dip when you're trying not to have a extra relationship affair, if that's the term. Chuck some guac in your gob.
I guess it's true, actually. Put it in an orifice. Put your dick in it. It's guacamole. It's there for you.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else you want to add on the tail end of the second watch of hopefully 52 of Sex and the City, Guy?
I just want to say congratulations to Jonathan Philly and Dana Robin, the unit production managers. God knows what a job they did on set. But they certainly did a good enough job to warrant first billing as the credits rolled. And I thought, wow, for a couple of unit production managers, you just know that's massive. So my sincere congratulations to them.
Well done, guys. Big, big congrats from me also. Thanks, Guy. See you soon.
Bye, Tim.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out. And we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.